Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Worst to Best, the monthly segment that I do for the Men in Tights podcast, where I rank movies from worst to best based 100% solely on my personal feelings for each film. And this edition of Worst to Best, as if you didn't already know from the title, the thumbnail, and, well, the day that this is being uploaded, it is about Halloween, a franchise spanning four decades and boasting 11 films to its name, with two more coming in 2020 and 2021. And again, these rankings are all based solely on my personal feelings of each film, so don't get mad at me for ranking certain films higher than others, because it's all subjective and everyone's gonna love or hate whatever they love or hate, you know? You know, like, for, you know, whatever I rank worst might be your favorite, or whatever I rank is the best might be your least favorite, you know? Again, it's all subjective, you know, everyone likes what they like, hates what they hate. And there is, you know, the confusion with the many timelines throughout the series, four timelines to be exact, which is, you know, Halloween 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, and then Halloween 1, 2, H2O Resurrection, then the Rob Zombie films, and then the current one, which is Halloween 78, Halloween 2018, and then Halloween Kills, Halloween Ends. And I do understand it can be a bit frustrating for some of the fans. But then again, you know, that kind of madness can be a lot of fun. Now let's dive headfirst into that madness, shall we? Kicking off the list at number 11, aka the worst Halloween film in my eyes, Halloween Resurrection. Pretty much everyone that I've talked to about the Halloween films tends to agree that this is the worst of the entire franchise. To me, it's just not a good film at all. I mean, the story itself is complete garbage. Nothing even remotely redeemable about it at all. At least not to me. The intro, killing off Laurie Strode at the beginning of the film, you know, it's a bit of an unexpected twist, which I do have to respect that, you know, creative choice. I do respect it. To me, it was a big mistake because everyone loves Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode. You know, she is the one that we root for in these movies, and to kill her off in the first 10-15 minutes, I don't know, it's been a while since I've seen it. I mean, I did see it a couple of weeks ago, but I try not to remember this movie too much. But yeah, it's a big mistake. And then after that, I mean, the sequence itself, up until when Laurie dies, it is a pretty good sequence, I will admit that. You know, but then after that, it becomes some reality show bullshit. You know, like the MTV show Fear. Anyone else remember that show? You know, where it's, you know, they go into the haunted house, but they have the cameras strapped to them. It basically became that, except it was not as entertaining. You know. I mean, the cast was not the best cast, but not the worst at the same time, you know? And Busta Rhymes was the male lead for this film, and, you know, I will say he did a much better job in this movie than I thought he would, you know, in his character. I don't remember the name. He was the one that's behind the reality show Dangertainment. Was his business. And we also had a few of the flavor of the month kind of actors of that time period, you know, like Sean Patrick Thomas from Save the Last Dance. And then we had the other characters like the stereotypical characters of the horror genre, you know, like the douchebag bad boy played by Luke Kirby. We had the good girl who's not really the good girl played by Daisy McCracken. The blonde tease with the big tits played by Katie Sackhoff, who... yeah, I enjoy her. the not a loser but not a popular kid played by Thomas Ian Nicholas, who's, you know, everyone best remembers for the American Pie films. And a couple of the other ones, I don't remember their names, but, you know, whatever. It was just, again, the whole story, just after Laurie's death, it was just so... I've only seen this film a handful of times. All the other Halloween movies I've seen at least five times each. This one I've seen, I think, maybe three or maybe four times total since it came out in 2002. Yeah, but it's just... I think that's the reason why I don't watch it that much, because it's just... I get so frustrated watching it because... I mean, the concept wasn't a bad one, it's just so poorly done. And then the ending, you know, Busta Rhymes being the one to take down Michael Myers at the end of the movie, using some kung fu bullshit that he learned from watching a movie in his hotel room earlier in the film. And God, that pissed me off so much. I mean, God, I mean, come on. Sorry, I'm getting physically ill just thinking about it right now. Ugh. I mean, and really the best thing to come out of this movie, at least for me, was Bianca. I never know how to say her last name. The main girl. She was also on Rules of Engagement, which was a very good show, and I wish that never got canceled. She is my favorite part of the movie because I just absolutely love her. And she was on Undateable, another show that should have never been canceled. I did also really like Tyra Banks getting killed in the movie. I did like that a lot, but I hated that it was an off-screen kill. Maybe the only other thing about this one that I guess you could say is redeemable, you know, for this shit fest of a film, was the score by Danny Lux, because it's actually one of my favorite scores out of the all 11 films of the Halloween franchise. But, I mean, besides Bianca and the score, and, you know, maybe the opening, you know, sequence with Laurie, it's just, I can't watch this film and say that I genuinely enjoy it at all. I usually say that I can find things about movies that make me enjoy watching them. This one is one of those films that I really have a hard time doing that. And I know that I'm not the only one, because I've so many people that I've talked to that I really hate this movie so much, and just, I don't know what they were thinking. I mean, and even the kills in the movie also, well, none of the kills are really memorable. I don't remember any of them off the top of my head. I mean, the one with Katie Sackhoff where she gets her head chopped off the top of the stairs. But besides that, I can't remember anything else that, you know, was like, oh, that was a great kill. I hate this movie so much. I really do. And coming in at number 11 on my list is Halloween 2, 2009. Rob Zombie's follow-up to his 2007 hit remake, Halloween. And this is another one that a lot of people, you know, debate on it, that it's the worst of the entire franchise, which, you know, can't really argue against that. You know, I mean, I can definitely agree that this is definitely, that's why it's on the bottom half of my list. But there are little things on here that's why I'm able to enjoy it a little more than I do Halloween Resurrection. I mean, like, the opening sequence was great. You know, like, it opens up directly from the ending of the first film, just like the original Halloween 2, with Laurie being taken to the hospital and Michael hunting her down. That's a whole great sequence, and some parts do go, are a little out there, a little what the fuck, but, you know. And it's, you know, that opening sequence to me was brutal in all the best ways. Like, when he, the way Michael brutally kills the nurse, I think it was the one that was played by Octavia Spencer, after he cuts her face, then he just stabs the hell out of her. I enjoyed that. but then it all turns out to be a dream that Laurie's having, and it brings us to the present day part of the story, which, depending on if you're watching the theatrical cut or the director's cut, it's either 1 year later or 2 years later. You know, the theatrical cut is one year later, and the director's cut is 2 years later. And then after this is where the story just falls apart so much. I mean, the thing that stands out the most to me with how balls, you know, off the wall, and just what the fuck were they thinking with the story, was the shit with the white horse. Like, what was that all about? Like, what the fuck, you know? Like, it didn't make any sense to me, but, you know, I was, you know, reading a review or ranking that somebody else had done for the Halloween movies, and he was saying that for Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, that you can appreciate it as an auteur film, which I kind of get what he means, because Rob Zombie does kind of go full Rob Zombie with this movie, and... You know, and if you've never seen the theatrical or the director's cut. The director's cut is the one that's, you know, out available for everyone to get out there. The theatrical cut is a little harder to find. You'd have to get the Canadian copy of both Rob Zombie Halloween films on Amazon if you want to watch the theatrical cuts, because the ones that are singular by themselves are the director's cuts for both films, which, I mean, that's fine, I don't mind, I enjoy the director's cuts, and I've only seen the theatrical cut of Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 one time. Most of the other ones I've seen is the director's cut, which, I mean, both of them are enjoyable in their own ways, though there are some parts that are very different. Which, I mean, it is what it is, you know. And really, like, I mean, some of the reasons that I'm able to somewhat enjoy this film more than I do, you know, Halloween Resurrection is because, like, I love Brad Dourif as Sheriff Brackett. I do. He's a great actor. And I love Danielle Harris in pretty much everything. And, you know, spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie, I did tear up pretty good when she dies in the movie. Especially in the director's cut version, where, you know, Sheriff Brackett, Brad Dourif as Brackett, has such an emotional breakdown, and then in the middle of his breakdown, they splice in some, you know, home video footage of Danielle Harris when she was a kid to, like, reel the camera in that, you know, that his baby girl is gone. That was a good one. That was a good little thing. And I love Scout Taylor Compton as Laurie Strode. Even though her performance as Laurie Strode in this film is a complete 180 from how she was presented in the first one. And also, I get to see Margot Kidder as Laurie's therapist in this movie, and Margot Kidder will always hold a very special place in my heart. And you guys should know why. And, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen either one, and I know in AMC is having a marathon of the Halloween movies right now, so I'll try to catch the Rob Zombie Halloween 2 on there, because that's one of the Halloween movies. I only currently have just the original Halloween 2, and then Halloween 4, 5, 6, and then, well, the producer's cut of Halloween 6, and Halloween 2018. I don't have the complete collection yet, but I'm working on it. So, I'm gonna have to get the Canadian double feature of the theatrical Halloween Rob Zombie films and the unrated director's cut Blu-rays as well to complete my collection, because it's been a while since I've seen both of those movies. Because I enjoy Rob Zombie's movies for the most part. I haven't seen all of them. I haven't seen Three from Hell or 31 yet. You know, and I'm sure I'll enjoy them, you know, for whatever they are. But really with Rob Zombie Halloween 2, you know, to me, like, if you ignore that it's supposed to be a Halloween film, then it actually is a pretty good film. If you ignore that it's part of the Halloween franchise, you know, it's enjoyable. But as a film in the Halloween franchise, it is definitely one of the worst out of all 11 films so far, and that in the opinions of myself and many other fans all around the world. So, yeah, I don't see a lot of people disagreeing with that particular ranking, at least. And the other thing about the Rob Zombie Halloween 2, you know, before I move on to the next one, is just the way they, you know, the Dr. Loomis is, you know, portrayed as kind of a dick in this one, where he becomes a bit of a diva, where the fame of being the Michael Myers doctor goes to his head, which was a very interesting direction to take. Which, I mean, because the first one, they did kind of play it safe with it, because the studio didn't want Rob to fuck it up, but when it was a hit, they told Rob Zombie, you know what, just go make whatever the fuck kind of movie you want to make, and this definitely showed, because this one definitely had the signature Rob Zombie stamp on it, which, depending on how you feel, it can be good or bad. For me, it's good, because again, I love Rob Zombie, he does make some good movies. But yeah, this one is definitely on the bottom of the Halloween movies, to me. And coming in at number 9, we have Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. This was the first and only film to not include Michael Myers, though he did technically appear in the movie during the TV commercial that played on the TV in the bar towards the beginning part of the movie. Which, yeah, I guess it's kind of a cop-out, but, you know, it's a nice little wink and nod to the audience. And then this film, it's, you know, it's about the evil masks from the Silver Shamrock Company, and they're powered by a stolen rock from Stonehenge. And, yeah, I know, it sounds a little very out there. And, you know, the evil power of the masks is triggered by the super fucking annoying Silver Shamrock song that plays several times throughout the film so that they drill it into your brain so that you know when this song plays, shit's gonna go down. And, you know, it stars Tom Atkins as Dr. Chalice, who is basically just a drunk bastard with a failed marriage who never gives a shit about his kids. And I gotta sneeze, hold on. Wow, yeah, that woke me up. And just, yeah, because the whole purpose of this, a lot of the documentaries that I've seen, like there's one documentary that I've, you know, gotten into on, it's on YouTube, and I'll have the link for that one in the description in case anyone wants to watch it. Or basically the explanation was that they wanted to do, like, with the Halloween films, they wanted to make it an anthology where every year it would be Halloween, but it would be telling a different story relating to Halloween, and that the directors can, you know, take those basic, like, take those stories and branch off into whatever, you know, spin-offs they wanted to take it in, and whatever directions they wanted to go in. You know, that was the plan that was supposed to be launched with Halloween 3. And, I mean, on paper, sounds like a pretty good idea, because it opens the door to all kinds of possibilities. It's just that it didn't work out, yeah, with the way it was supposed to. Which, I mean, you can't really fault the people that made this movie, because they tried their best with what they had. You know, they really did. What was the name? Damn, I can't remember his name. Dwight Little, I think was the name. Shit, let me look it up, because I don't want to give false information. Alright, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, answer. What was the name? Tommy Lee Wallace. I don't know why I thought Dwight Little. I think maybe Dwight Little was one of the other ones. Was Halloween 4. I think he was. Let me look that up while I'm here. Yeah, Dwight Little was Halloween 4. Yeah, so I got confused. Yeah, Tommy Lee Wallace directed Halloween 3. And he actually had worked on Halloween 1 with John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, and Deborah Hill was the one that convinced him to come back and direct this one. And while I'm on the website here, let me read the plot of what it was. Yeah, the film tells the story of Dr. Dan Chalice, along with Ellie Grimbridge, who traveled to the small town of Santa Maria, California, where he discovers that the Silver Shamrock Novelties, a company run by Connell Cochran, is attempting to use the mystic powers of the Stonehenge Rocks to kill children when they all wear his masks and watch the Silver Shamrock commercial. Yeah, again, it's a bit of an out there, you know, story, but I mean, it's not the worst concept in the world, you know, for a movie like this, for this genre especially. I mean, like I said, I know it didn't really translate well to a lot of people, but you know, but again, like I said with Rob Zombie's H2, if you ignore that it's supposed to be part of the Halloween franchise, it can be an enjoyable film. It can, you know. I know not everyone enjoys it, like, you know, my brother, I spoke to him about it, about the Halloween movies, a week ago, and he said that he tried watching it, forgetting that it's supposed to be Halloween 3, and he just didn't like it, and that's fine. I can enjoy it a lot more than I enjoy Halloween Resurrection. But I guess part of that is because, because John Carpenter was still involved, and he was producer, and he co-wrote the story, I believe. And then he did the score with Alan Howarth. And seriously, that score that him and that they both did for this film is probably one of my absolute favorite scores of any movie I've ever heard, because it's just so haunting and chilling, and every time I listen to it, I get like it sends a chill down my spine, legitimately, and I just love it so much. And like especially that opening where with the synths and the little, you know, animated pumpkin that comes up on the screen, like the music, it's so creepy, and I love it. But the film itself, again, a bit of a convoluted mess, and his fans wanted more of Michael Myers. They did not get it in this film, so they were angry, and I think it's actually one of the lowest grossing of the Halloween franchise. Let me check that out. You know, Halloween franchise box office. All right, box office. There we go. All right, here I am on Box Office Mojo. Let me check this shit out. Season of the Witch is actually the second lowest grossing worldwide for the Halloween franchise. Huh. Interesting little fact. And the one that happens to be the lowest grossing of the Halloween franchise? Well, that is the film that comes up next on number 8 of my worst to best for Halloween, and it is Halloween 5, Revenge of Michael Myers. Yeah. The film that, franchise really starts to go off the rails with the main story involving Michael Myers. This is the film that introduced to us the Curse of Thorn and the mysterious Man in Black, which confused pretty much everyone, including the people who made the damn movie. And no, I am not exaggerating. That is the truth. That is legitimately the truth. But yeah, this is, you know, the follow-up to Halloween 4, which I will get to, don't worry. And it was directed by a French guy named Dominique Othenin-Girard, who he stepped in and don't know what the hell he was trying to do with this movie, but he tried something different. You know, he definitely tried something. It is just so. Like I said, this is where the franchise really starts to just take a complete shift left field into a what the fuck is going on territory, and it is just basically like, you know, again, what the fuck were they thinking kind of thing, and I don't know what to say about this movie, because it is just so. I mean. For me, I personally can sit down and watch this movie and have fun with it, because there are some redeeming qualities, even though like the mask sucked. It really sucked. It's one of the worst, probably my least favorite. Well, actually no. Now my least favorite would actually be the one from Resurrection. But just because I hear it, yeah, I'll just read the little thing that's on here. It says Michael Myers is, you know, following from Halloween 4, shot down my job, and then Sheriff Meeker, lynch mob, and state police toss dynamite down to finish him off, and he escapes near a creek and stumbles on a local hermit, which there's actually a lot of things going on with that. Apparently the opening was supposed to be a different person in the movie, where instead of the hermit with the parrot, it was supposed to be a guy named Dr. Death, who lays him on like an altar and performs a bunch of like rituals on him, and that's where the tattoo of Thorn comes in, because if you pay attention to the opening of that movie, well, and by the way, the opening credits with the slicing of the pumpkins, pretty fucking cool opening credit scene in my opinion. But you notice like when you see Michael, like he turns his hand and he has the thorn on his wrist, you see the symbols underneath him, because he's laying on that altar, and he starts twitching, and you see the candles and stuff around. But then when you see him in the distance sit up, everything around looks completely different, because they reshot that opening sequence essentially last minute, which, again, you know, and I didn't know about that until I saw the documentary. It's the Dead Man's Party Making of Halloween 5 documentary, where they explained that, yeah, there was a lot of stuff like that, what that was supposed to be featured, where, you know, that they just, for whatever reason, just wanted to change it up because, I don't know, because, and then, because Dan Shanks, he's the one who played Michael Myers in this movie, and he said that that was one of his favorite kills in the movie, but for whatever reason, they just decided to change it into what they changed it to, and I don't know, I mean, yeah, it was supposed to be, yeah, that he turns him, God, sorry, I'm still stumbling a little bit, that he performs all these rituals and, you know, does the curse of the thorn and all that, and, which, if they had kept that in, it would have made a lot more sense, and would have been a much more cohesive story. For whatever reason, they decided not to do that. They decided, no, we're not gonna do that. Why? I don't know. But, I mean, if they're introducing the Curse of Thorn and the Man in Black, then perhaps y'all should keep that story in there, because why take that out when that's essentially what the story is supposed to be now? For whatever reason, they decided, no, we're not gonna do that. And they left the Man in Black stuff in there, but, you know, they just said, we'll just explain it all in Halloween 6, and, I mean, they tried, but just the groundwork that they laid for it, just, none of it made sense. It was very random, and you can tell some parts were just things that were supposed to be there got cut out, like another sequence, again, referenced in the making of documentary, that was supposed to, they mentioned about a you know, something at the children's hospital that Jamie is staying at, which, you know, her being mute in this movie also was just a weird artistic choice, I guess is what it was. She became mute because of the psychological trauma that she suffered from the events of Halloween 4. And she has a telepathic connection to Michael now, where, like, when he's doing things, she feels it and she starts having seizures and whatever the fuck. Like, during the opening, when he rises up from that altar, she starts twitching too, and when he reaches up for the mask, she mimics the same gestures, and it's just, I mean, it was a creative choice, but, yeah, not a lot of fans liked it. But it's just, I don't know. And you know, Dr. Loomis starts to go a little more psycho in this one as well, where, you know, you start to see him and his descent into the madness as well. Which I respect that, because he did go a little mad in this movie. He went a little more than mad. You know, but that all started in Halloween 4, which, again, I'll get to that in a little bit. But, and then the house that they use, that's supposed to be Michael Myers' home, was obviously not the same home. It was a completely different home, although it did look nice. You know, if I had the money, I would buy that house, renovate it, and make it mine. And the choice to kill Rachel Carruthers in the movie was not a popular choice, you know, for anybody. The fans hated it, Ellie Cornell hated it, and especially being killed off in the manner that she was, the fans especially did not love that. And it's just, and then she was, you know, basically replaced by Wendy Kaplan, who plays Tina, and a lot of people did not like Tina. I mean, when I was younger and I first saw this movie, yeah, I definitely did not like her either. But, you know, now that I'm an adult and I rewatch the movies, I don't mind her as much. She's still a little annoying. Definitely a little annoying. But I can tolerate her a little more now, because I understand it's not her fault that things went the way they did with this movie, because her hands were kind of tied. She was just an actress hired to do the job. You know, it's not her fault that shit went so off the rails like it did. And And also, like, the way the movie ended, where they capture Michael Myers and they have him arrested, and he's just sitting in the prison cell playing with the little chains that he's, cuffed to, and it's just like, that looks so pathetic and not at all Michael Myers, Like, after killing all these people throughout the previous films up to that point, to just be taken down after getting beat with a 2x4, because that's what it was. Yeah, he's beaten down with a 2x4, and then they just cuff him and lock him in a cell. Like, what? Michael Myers is not supposed to be taken down that easily. Come on. But that's what they did with this movie. So, but again, like, I know a lot. It's not a lot of people's favorite film of the Halloween franchise, but I can enjoy it a lot more than I enjoyed some of the other ones. Well, again, it's all subjective, but for me personally, I definitely enjoy this more than I enjoyed, Halloween 3, Rob Zombie Halloween 2, and Halloween Resurrection. And now, coming in at number 7, we have Halloween H2O, 20 years later. Or, Halloween 7, if you want to call it that. And this is the one that they basically, it just wipes out Halloween 4, 5, and 6 out of existence completely. And reintroduces Laurie Strode to the franchise, with Jamie Lee Curtis returning for the first time since Halloween 2, the original Halloween 2. And we all cheered, and we all were so happy because we love Jamie Lee Curtis. We also got, some of the up-and-coming stars of the time period, like Josh Hartnett and Michelle Williams, which, Michelle Williams has gone on to be such an amazing actress. She truly has, and I absolutely love her. I really do. And plus, she's just gotten fucking hot and hot and hot over the years. But again, like, looking at the documentaries that from. And also the script breakdown videos that I've seen from the guys over at We Watched a Movie. I'll have the link to their YouTube channel down in the description if you want to check them out, because they're pretty damn cool. The version of H2O that we got wasn't what it was originally going to be. Although many elements from that original script were used in the final product, but there was a lot of it that was very different. Like the way the movie ended was supposed to be very, very different, although again, a lot of elements were still very much the same. I mean, for them trying to make this, the true direct sequel to Halloween 2, it was a very, very good attempt. Wasn't the best, I mean, at the time when I saw it back in 1998, I loved it. I thought it was one of the best movies I'd ever seen. But at that time, I was 11 years old, didn't have a great understanding of what movies were like. So now that I'm an adult, I'm 32, I'll be 33 in 2 months. I have a better understanding of how film works. I realize now that they really played it safe with this movie, because, I mean, if you remember some of the horror movies that came out during the time, or the slasher films of the time period, like Scream, they really played it safe and tried to do it in that style. So, like, out of all the Halloween movies, even though Halloween Resurrection was the worst one, that one felt more like a Halloween movie than H2O did. Even though H2O is definitely the better movie, Halloween H2O doesn't feel like a real Halloween film. To me. To me. I'm sure I know others will feel differently, but yeah, this is all my opinion. And just the way. And then, like I said, some of the kills, especially, were just very basic and generic and really not the most exciting. And then the score also, which again, going back to the documentary that I will have all that in the description. Sorry, trying to catch my breath. I'm recording this on Wednesday night. Well, actually, no, not Wednesday night. I'm recording this Tuesday evening after watching NWA Power, so I'm trying to catch my breath because I really love that show and it's a lot of fun. Great wrestling, y'all should check it out. Anyways. That the score was supposed to be John Ottman, who has done a lot of great scores for a lot of films, particularly some of the X-Men movies. The ones directed by Bryan Singer, after the first one. Because, yeah, he did X-Men 2 and Days of Future Past and Apocalypse. He also did Superman Returns. So he's done some good scores in the Fantastic Four movies. I believe the first two, not the one by Josh Trank. And what they did is the score that he had written was a very like orchestra recreation of the original John Carpenter Halloween score. And the studio didn't like it, so they replaced it with a Marco Beltrami score, which I was if you've seen H2O, it was basically the score for Scream. So it's like they literally just took the Scream score and put it over with Halloween. And the only score or piece of music from John Ottman that's retained is the opening, credits music, the theme song. The rest of it is, back catalog music that they'd already owned, which, I can understand. Again, like I said, they played it really safe with this movie because, it was their first attempt, trying to, breathe life back into the franchise, and they didn't want to fuck it up. But it wasn't bad. Like I said, I mean, I loved Jamie Lee Curtis coming back, and her mom Janet Leigh, getting to be in there and having the old car that she drove in from Psycho. I know Jamie Lee Curtis. I mean, I don't know her, but I'm pretty certain that she that that's that that's what this film holds that special place in her heart for getting to film a movie with her mom, getting to have that moment with her. I know I'm pretty sure she will cherish that forever. Whatever she feels about the movie itself, I don't know. But I feel confident in saying that she, will cherish that memory of doing the movie with her mom at least. And we also got Joseph Gordon-Levitt in his first movie as well. He was only in the opening scene, and he gets killed pretty brutally with the, ice skating, blade right through the face. And Nancy Stevens, the nurse from Halloween 1 and 2 that was with Dr. Loomis, she made her return and she gets killed as well. And she's also supposed to be coming back in Halloween Kills. So that's pretty exciting to see how that works out. And the way the mask for H2O, that yeah, that's a whole mythology unto itself, because there's several different masks used in this film. There's the Kane B mask that they showed in the original teaser trailer for the movie that just is very blank, blank, pale, and motionless, as Dr. Loomis described Michael in the first film. But not in a good way is what this one was, and then the second one that came later on, that they had to reshoot all the close-up scenes with, that one was not much better either. And then in the part like when he when at the back door of the neighbor of the next door house when Michael is gonna kill Miss Nurse Chambers. And when he takes that first step from behind the doorway, he's actually wearing the mask from Halloween 6, which is probably the only time in the movie that the mask actually looks good. Because then they have the other masks throughout the film, and then also the CGI mask for the one kill that happens in the school kitchen, which was just the worst one out of all the bad masks in the entire franchise. That CGI mask is definitely the single worst moment of the entire franchise, in my opinion. And it's just the first time I saw that, again, I was 11 years old at the time, and even I said, "What the fuck was that?" And I didn't cuss a lot when I was a child. Like, clearly I do it a lot more now, but that's when I was younger, I did not. But that was definitely a what the fuck moment. And just yeah, I don't know why they had such a problem with the mask. I mean, because the mask is such an iconic piece to the identity of Michael Myers that the fact that they've gotten it wrong so much since the original film is just I don't know how they can just. I don't know how they can do that. I don't know how they can keep getting away with these horrible masks that they've had over the years. But it is what it is. But yeah, you know, like I said, it's overall, it's not the worst movie. I mean, LL Cool J, I enjoyed him in the movie a lot more than I did Busta Rhymes, but even LL Cool J was pretty annoying to me. But the ending, I did enjoy the ending where, you know, she chops off his head with the axe, you know, with such a definitive ending. But that all got ruined by them doing Resurrection, which apparently at the time they were already planning that anyways, and Jamie Lee Curtis was not 100% aware of that. Well, again, check out the documentary to learn all about those fun little details. And coming in at number 6, we have Halloween 2007, Rob Zombie's attempt at reviving the Halloween franchise from the coma that was placed in after a resurrection. And I know a lot of people love to shit on this film, and that's fine. Again, it's all subjective, people will have their opinions, but I loved it. Hence why I have it ranked, you know, so high on my list. Now, to me, the cast for this film, for Rob Zombie's Halloween 2007, is one of the best in the entire franchise. I mean, and we had the great Brad Dourif as Sheriff Brackett, the legend Malcolm McDowell as Dr. Loomis, my future ex-wife Danielle Harris as Annie Brackett, Scout Taylor Compton as Laurie Strode, and the always amazing Dee Wallace as Cynthia Strode, Laurie's mom, who I've had a couple of interactions on social media with over the years, and she's such a lovely woman. And yes, it is legitimately her, the blue, you know, blue check mark and all. And again, it's just such a great cast all around. The cast, I have no complaints about. I don't know if some people have the issues with a Sherry Moon Zombie being Michael Myers' mom in the film. Which, I mean, yeah, I get that, because Rob Zombie casts his wife in literally all of his movies. And that can be, you know, problemsome for some. I get that. I don't mind it. Yeah, I do enjoy her. And Tyler Mane playing Michael Myers. I thought he did a phenomenal job in this movie as Michael Myers. He had a great intimidating monster look for Michael Myers. Because after a while with the Halloween films, Michael looked less and less intimidating. But Tyler Mane, you know, with his, you know, massive size and hulking brute, whatever the fuck you want to call it, he looked scary and intimidating and terrifying as Michael Myers. And the kills, you know, weren't what you would have expected from a Rob Zombie movie, because Rob Zombie, he loves going gory with his movies, but you know, like I said earlier with H2, Rob Zombie's H2, you know, the studio did try to play it somewhat safe with this one, because because they did not want Rob to, you know, fuck up their pride and their baby. They didn't want him to fuck up the franchise. You know, that's up for debate whether or not he really did. But again, I enjoyed this particular iteration of it. You know, much better than the second one, that's for damn sure. I mean, the story is essentially the same as the original. You know, Halloween night, he snaps and kills his sister. But this one, like, you know, Rob decided to add the backstory to explain why Michael Myers became the psycho killer that we all knew him to be. You know, some people liked it, some people hated it, other people couldn't care less about it because they just wanted to see more brutal killing going on. Well, yeah, some people that they say that they, you know, gave Michael Myers the background of a, you know, white trash, you know, fucked up family, with the girl that played young Jenny from Forrest Gump playing Judith Myers, which was, you know, very weird for me, realizing that it was little baby Jenny, all grown up playing Judith Myers having sex with her boyfriend and then getting killed by her little brother. Because Forrest Gump is one of my all-time favorite movies, and her as young as little Jenny, so adorable. When I watch this movie, now as an adult, it does kind of fuck with my head a little bit. But anyways, this one, they put it right there, out there for you, right away, that Michael and Lori, that they're supposed to be brother and sister. Not like how in the original that they didn't have anything. This one, they put it right out there, because they have her as a little baby in the house at the beginning of the movie. And that the mom and little baby Lori, who... and as we found out in Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, that her name was actually Angel Myers. That his little baby sister and the mom were the only people in his life that he genuinely had love for. Which makes it so heartbreaking when he snaps and starts killing everybody, and then when he's locked up at Smith's Grove Sanitarium, he snaps again and kills one of the nurses, and then they show the mom at home, just so distraught over everything, she can't handle it anymore, and she kills herself after watching some home family video projections of all that stuff. Then we cut to the years later when he breaks out of the prison, which is a pretty cool sequence, for his escape, which I know some people did not like it, but it is what it is. Again, I happen to enjoy it, with the theatrical cut, the way he escapes, that he's, being transferred by the guards, and he just, decides, fuck it, and just starts hacking them all up one by one. The director's cut, however, he escapes when, the guard and his cousin take a new inmate who's there for the first time, apparently, and they decide they're gonna go to Michael's room, and they're gonna rape her on his bed. Which is a very uncomfortable scene for a lot of people. I do not like that. I mean, I love the director's cut of this movie, but that is the one that I just do not like. That's the thing about it. If you did not include that rape scene, which just really served no actual purpose for the story, other than just to have it, I would say that the director's cut is one of my favorite of the Halloween franchise, like definitive favorites. But just again, that scene is just so uncomfortable to watch. I do not enjoy seeing rape scenes in movies. Integral to the plot and actually advances the story in a good way, then okay. But when it's just done for the fuck of it, like it is here, I hate it. But other than that, I really like the movie. I think it's a great movie, and the soundtrack is a really good soundtrack. I really enjoy it, and the score by Tyler Bates, it's pretty good. It's he puts his unique spin on the John Carpenter score, and it's not a great score. It's good to listen to, just because they have a lot of sound effects in it that not a lot of people would enjoy. I enjoy it though. It's not bad. It's not the worst. The soundtrack, like the song choices for the movie, I really enjoy. Like Halloween 2 by Misfits is in there, and I love that song. I love the Misfits. Tom Sawyer by Rush, great fucking song. Blue Oyster Cult, the Don't Fear the Reaper. What's it on that they have Alice Cooper in it as well. Bachman Turner Overdrive. They have a lot of great songs in this movie. They have the version of Mr. Sandman that they played during the credits. It's very creepy. I love it though. Like the way they paint like Dr. Loomis in this movie, I absolutely love, because he's, you can very, he, you, especially in the director's cut, he's very much, that he's, that he feels like a such a real responsibility over Michael, as his caretaker, as his therapist, as his doctor, and that he, you know, you can, that he feels like he genuinely, truly failed him in trying to rehabilitate, you know, Michael Myers from his evil ways, is the only way I could probably put it. And Scout Taylor Compton, like, the way she plays Laurie Strode in this movie is very much like the wholesome girl next door babysitter, like Jamie Lee Curtis plays her in the first film. Because in the second film, she's traumatized, going through PTSD, which you see more of that in the director's cut of Rob Zombie Halloween 2. And she becomes kind of a drunk and a drug addict and a bit of a whore-ish kind of character, which, I mean, Scouts, you know, like a Scout Taylor Compton, I don't mind her going a little whore-ish. But anyways, just, she plays it more true to the Jamie Lee Curtis interpretation of Laurie Strode in the first film. And of course, Daniel Harris as Annie Brackett. Again, I absolutely love Daniel Harris. So seeing her here as Annie Brackett was just so lovely. I don't have that many complaints really about this movie. Yeah, I know not a lot of people love it. That's fine. That's their choice. You know, they have every right to hate the film as much as they want to. And then coming in at number 5 on my list, we have Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. Or, as it was originally known, Halloween 666, The Origin of Michael Myers. Yes, that was the original name for the film. And I know not a lot of people like this movie, although it has developed a bit of a cult following over the years, you know, cult classic status. You know, and after watching the producer's cut of the film a few times in this year, especially, I've grown to really love this movie. And that includes both versions, with the producer and a theatrical cut, even with all the differences that they have, which, if you've seen the producer's cut, there are a lot of differences. Like, they really go more deeper into the Thorn curse in this movie. Like, the entire third act of the film in the producer's cut is different from what the theatrical cut was, where in the theatrical cut, they're in like a little hospital setting, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but the Marion, what's her name, the character she plays, in the movie, that she's like strapped to like a hospital bed, and there's like all these doctors around, and Michael Myers hacks up a bunch of the doctors in a pretty cool, you know, pretty cool scene, and they find their way into this like lab area where they're like growing test tube babies, which is pretty fucked up. Which I guess they felt was more acceptable than the original version, where she's being laid on an altar for a ritualistic sacrifice thing with the Thorn Curse people. And Paul Rudd as grown-up Tommy Doyle decides to help her out and rescue her, and then he stops Michael with the power of the runes and all that shit. Which, yeah, this was Paul Rudd's first film that he had ever done at the time. Even though, you know, this film came out after Clueless, he filmed Halloween first and then went on to do Clueless before they had to come back for the reshoots for the film. But yeah, to me, the producer's cut is more of a cohesive and consistent story, even though it's still not perfect for a lot of reasons. You know, and this was actually the last film of what was the original timeline for Halloween. It was, like I said, it was Halloween 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6. That was the original Halloween timeline, before it was, you know, rebooted with H2O, and then rebooted again with Halloween 2018. And yeah, the Curse of the Thorn and the Mystery of the Who the Fuck the Man in Black was all supposed to come together and be explained, and God bless this crew because they really tried their best to make it work. And again, was it perfect? Definitely not. But I think it's an enjoyable film and it features some of my favorite kills in the entire franchise, and that includes both versions of the film. Like again, the sequence where Michael kills all the doctors, that was a pretty cool sequence. And then the dad in the movie, the way he kills him, in the actual cut, when he stabs him into the power box, he is electrocuted, and then his he starts foaming at the mouth, and his head explodes. But in the producer's cut, it's not quite as brutal. It's a little more subtle, because they try to make it not quite as bloody as Halloween 5 and Halloween 4 were up to that point. They tried to make it a little more subtle, like the first film. And also, like the way Jamie dies in the movie, in the producer's cut, she gets stabbed in the stomach with a, with an off-screen, stab in the barn, in the movie, and then she's eventually killed later on at the hospital, afterwards. But in the theatrical cut, she's thrown into a farm machine that blades pierce right through her abdomen. And then he turns on the machine and it just shreds the shit out of her intestines, and that's how she dies. Again, if you've never, you really should go out of your way to watch both the theatrical and the producer's cut, because they are very different. So the music is a little different, and a lot of scenes are very different. Points, some pieces of dialogue are different as well. But I enjoyed both movies for what they were. Again, neither of them are perfect, but yeah. And again, and speaking of Jamie Lloyd, the controversy with the recasting of Jamie Lloyd with J.C. Brandy replacing Danielle Harris, which a lot of fans did not like that. They really hated that. But it's unfair to put all that heat onto J.C. Brandy because, again, she was just an actress, just like what I said with. Who the fuck was it? Oh yeah, what I said about the Wendy Kaplan as Tina in Halloween 5. JC was just, doing the job she was hired for. Can't really be mad at her for that. It's just, I'm sure at the time she was just happy to have the job. She probably thought this was gonna be her big break, getting to be killed in a Halloween movie. But yeah, because fans were so, they fell so deeply in love with Danielle Harris as Jamie Lloyd, they didn't want anyone else to play her, so. Yeah, piss off a lot of people. And at the time, again, I was not completely aware of how movies worked back then. It was 1995 when this came out, so I would have been 8 going on 9. And again, I had no idea that it was even a different actress, because I was unaware of such controversies. And also, this would unfortunately end up being the final film in the life of the legend Donald Pleasance, because he died shortly after they finished filming the original producer's cut of the film, as it's, as we all know it, as we all call it. So, in the theatrical cut, some of his scenes, they do seem a little bit off with relation to the flow of the story, because obviously he was not available for those reshoots, so they had to try to work with what they had and try to make it as coherent and cohesive as possible, which is up for interpretation whether or not it worked or didn't. And also, with the theatrical cut, the way they reworked the ending after Tommy beats the shit out of Michael with a lead pipe in the little, test tube, baby growing room, Dr. Loomis goes back into the building, and it's almost like it's implied that he dies in there, because they zoom in on Michael Myers' mask on the floor, covered in the green shit that was oozing out of his head, which I still have no idea what that was all about, and you just hear him screaming off screen, and then it cuts to the pumpkin, and then we go to the credits. But in the producer's cut, after Michael is stopped by the power of the runes, what Tommy Doyle did, because he had been obsessed with Michael Myers ever since the events of the first film, and he was researching, and that's where he discovered what the Curse of the Runes was, and he was the one who understood that the power of the thorn is what controlled Michael, and he was researching how he could use that to stop him. And with his knowledge of the runes, he put down a bunch of the runes and screamed out. He whispered Samhain, even though it's supposed to be pronounced Samhain. Yeah, I know, it's written Samhain, but it's pronounced Samhain. It really is. You can look it up. And Michael is just stood frozen in place, and the man in black, who I can't remember what his name was, but he was played by the guy that was Greg's dad on Dahmer and Greg. And he plays, I can't remember the actor's name, but he was Dr. Nguyen, who was supposed to be the doctor from Halloween 1, the one that tells Dr. Loomis, you know, and tells him, like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, for God's sakes, he can't even drive a car. You know, like, the Haddonfield's 100 miles away from here. You know, yeah, he's supposed to be him. And we find out that he's the man in black that had been behind all this, and that he was in the producer's cut. He goes on a very menacing speech about, you know, that I am, you know, Michael's protector, his guardian, and all this other stuff. That he approaches Michael at the end of the movie, tries to, you know, wake him up from his, like, you know, zombie-like state or whatever it was. And then Dr. Loomis enters into the hallway, and he sees what he believes is Michael unconscious on the floor, surrounded by the runes that Tommy had laid out. Takes the mask off, and nope, it's Dr. Nguyen. And he wakes up briefly, confused as fuck as to what's going on, and he says, Michael's gone. And then he grabs Loomis's arm and says, it's your game now, Loomis, before we presume that he dies. And then Loomis, he rolls his sleeve down, and the thorn just magically appears on his wrist. And then he starts screaming out, which is the scream that you hear in the theatrical cut of the film, where, again, we are to assume that he dies. And he starts screaming that out, and then they cut to the back of, you know, the shape of Man in Black, you know, his outfit, which turns out to be, it's Michael Myers wearing the Man in Black outfit, because he was escaping from the Smith Grove Sanitarium, and then that's where the movie ends. Again, it's up, all subjective, how you feel about these movies, but I really, the more I watch both of the producers and the theatrical cut, I really genuinely enjoy these movies more now. You know, I have a greater appreciation and love for them. I really do. And coming in at number 4, we have Halloween 4. The Return of Michael Myers. This is the film that introduced us all to Danielle Harris. This is her first movie, and we are so grateful that this movie introduced us to her, because she is lovely and has gone on to make a lot of really fun movies. And one of those films that of hers that I really, really enjoy is actually See No Evil 2, which is the WWE Studios film starring Kane as Jacob Goodnight. It was a really good one. One of my favorites of WWE's movies, and you guys should definitely check that one out. It's very good, in my opinion, at least. We also got to enjoy more of the great Donald Pleasance as Dr. Loomis, and we get to see the beginning stages of his slow descent into his own madness in his quest to take down Michael Myers, which was a lot of fun to watch. And we also got the lovely Ellie Cornell as Rachel Carruthers. Such a great character, and Bo Starr as Sheriff Meeker, who was the successor to Charles Cypher as Sheriff Brackett. He did a wonderful job as well. Kathleen Kinmon as Kelly Meeker, who, yeah, I really enjoyed her in this movie. And, you know, a few others, like Sasha, whatever the fuck his name was, who played the boyfriend Brady. Yeah, he was pretty cool. I enjoyed him. Basically what they tried to do with Halloween 4, in the words of the late Mustafa Akkad himself, they tried to go back to the first movie, because that's the success. And yeah, you really can't blame them, because the first one, yeah, up to that point, that was the film that I had actually had seen some real, legitimate success. So, and, it's just really a very good movie, honestly, and, you know, the plot for this film, again, this one was directed by Dwight Little, and this one picks up 10 years after the events of the first Halloween film, and again, it takes place in 1988. It's 10 years later, and the Michael Myers, he's in a comatose state for the 10 years since then, after the explosion at the end of Halloween 2 at the Haddonfield Hospital, and that's why in the movie Dr. Loomis has like the burns on the side of his face and on his hand. And this is where we're introduced to the story that that Laurie showed, and whoever the husband is had apparently died in a car accident some like almost a year earlier from this. And Jamie Lloyd is their daughter, again played by the wonderful Danielle Harris, who at that time, again, this was her first movie and or first major film, and did a wonderful job, such a great job. And for it being her first major film, like you would not have known that that was her first big movie, because she did such a great job. And some of the kills in this movie were very unique, and probably the most unique one was the first big one that we get to see, where with the thumb through the doctor's forehead or the paramedic's forehead, which I think might actually be my favorite one in the entire movie, because I don't know, it's just so, it catches you off guard. It really does, and it's just, I don't know, just something about it is just, I think, I don't know why that was my favorite one, it just is. And Alan Howarth, he came back to do the score for this film. The funny thing with him, that he did the score for Halloween's 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. The only composer to have done that many for a single franchise movie, as far as I know. A lot of other horror franchises, I don't think they've had one composer for that many films, because I don't know. But I just love that he was able to leave his mark on the Halloween franchise by doing the score for 5 of those films. That's awesome. I love that. And all of his scores are wonderful. I really love them. I really do. And I think, like, looking back, I think the score he did for Halloween 6 might have been my favorite. And you should definitely check out the expanded version of it, where it's the music from the producer and the theatrical cut, it's on Spotify if you ever want to check it out. And this is the first one that he gets to do without, you know, teaming with John Carpenter, which you can definitely hear that. I mean, it still has the John Carpenter influence, because it, after all, it is Halloween. You know, this is Carpenter's baby. Yeah, I just had, and this one does feature, you know, like how I said about the Halloween H2O with the CGI mask being the worst moment for all the masks. This one has that one scene where they have the unpainted, unaltered mask for Michael Myers, where the face is pink with like blondish, whitish hair. And when they're in the school, and when he throws Dr. Loomis through the door, even when I was a kid and I saw that movie for the first time, even I knew, like, he's not supposed to look like that. And as an adult, when I watch it, I just laugh every time that moment comes up, because it's just so like, how did they screw it? How do they not notice that right away? I mean, such an obvious difference from the previous, like, you know, hour and a half up to that point. But you know. You know, the director, his excuse is that it was very late at night and just they were all too tired to notice, and, you know, whether or not that's the truth, I don't know. But, you know, it is what it is. I still enjoy it very much, and the way it ends with Jamie at the top of the stairs, you know, with the knife after, what they made it, and the way they did it in this one, they made it seem like she killed the adopted mom in the movie, but... You know, and then they kind of fix that in Halloween 5, where it's like, no, she didn't kill her. She just stabbed her severely, but didn't kill her. But in the ending of it, it's depicted as if, you know, she had killed the mom, which, you know, the writer, what was his name? I can't remember the name. But yeah, that was supposed to be like the jumping off point of, like, you know, that it was gonna go. It was intended, I think, for her to be the new killer or whatever going forward, but, you know, obviously they did not go in that direction. How that would have worked, I have no idea. Would have been very different, a very different franchise, that's for sure. Not sure how that, you know, would have been though. One thing though that I just, even as a kid, I didn't understand this, because in this, when they're in the school and the other kids are in their costumes and they're teasing Jamie, they're making fun of her for her mom being dead. Like, even, like, at whatever age I saw the movie for the first time, even back then, I was like, I didn't understand, like, why are they making fun of her for her mom being dead? That's such a fucked up thing to do. Like, seriously. Like, you know, like, I know kids can be cruel, but that is beyond cruel. That is heartless. Like, you're making fun of her for her mom being dead. That's fucked up. But hey, you know, they had their reasons for making it, so. And then the clown costume that was meant to be young Michael, and they barely even tried to make it resemble, which it did not resemble it at all. Then that's fine. I imagine they didn't have the licensing for the original clown costume from the first film. So it is what it is. But yeah, that's Halloween 4. Coming in at number 3 on my list is Halloween 2 from 1981, the original Halloween 2, which picked up directly from the ending of the first film on the same night, which not a lot of franchises in horror or slasher films ever do. It's a very, very rare thing. Most films in general don't like to pick up directly on the same night at the end of the first film. And this film was actually the very first Halloween film that I had ever watched when I was a kid. And it was also the first time I saw a naked woman on screen, so it's good memories all around. But yeah, this one picked up directly from the ending of the first film, and which, I mean, when Carpenter did the first Halloween film, he really had no intentions of doing a sequel at all. But, you know, the success of that first film, he was pressured by the studio to come back and do a second one. So, as he always says, you know, just sitting one late night on his typewriter and his six-pack, He wrote up the story for Halloween 2, and that's where we got the story of Laurie and Michael being brother and sister. Which, you know, some people thought that was a good twist, you know, others, not so much, I don't know. I mean, I like it either way. I like them being brother and sister, and I like them not being brother and sister. It's, you know, it is what it is. But the thing, though, that really gets me, and I'm learning this, realizing this as an adult many years later. Because this is directed by Rick Rosenthal. Yeah, he directed this film, and he directed Halloween Resurrection. And you would not have realized that if I didn't just tell you, probably. Because this film is so fun, and for some people, as a lot of people, this is their favorite Halloween film of the franchise. And the fact that this is directed by the same guy that did Halloween Resurrection? How do you get this film and then get the shit that we got with Resurrection? I do not understand that. And as an adult, you know, becoming more aware of this kind of stuff with movies, I just don't understand how does something like that happen? Seriously, I just don't get it. I really don't. Oh God, yeah, I do not get it. I really don't. I don't understand how he can direct The Great Halloween 2 and then be the same one that directs the shit Halloween Resurrection. I guess also it's because that Halloween 2 was written by John Carpenter and Deborah Hill. Halloween Resurrection was written by, let me see, Larry Brand and Sean Hood. No idea who the hell they are. Halloween 2 still had Carpenter's fingerprints on it. Halloween Resurrection had no fingerprints from Carpenter at all, so probably that's why such a shitty difference between the two. I just don't get it. Sorry, I can't keep rambling on about how I just don't get it. Man, this all takes place in the hospital after Michael tried to kill Laurie, after he already killed her friends, you know, Linda and Annie and Bob and, you know, a couple other people. And this is another thing, just remembering from another conversation I had with my brother with the Halloween movies, with Mrs. Elrod, Mr. and Mrs. Elrod, that the chick that, you know, lives next door to them, she screams because Michael walks into the house and takes the knife from the counter, and the girl goes on the phone, so he's like, oh, Mr. and Mrs. Elrod, and, you know, and she's like, she's always putting him down, and he probably got angry and just started beating her. She just says it so casually, like, oh, it happens all the time, and my brother and I, we just started laughing our asses off at that, because it's just so, like, yeah, it really is such a what-the-fuck kind of thing. It's like, Yeah, she says, like, Mr. and Mrs. Elroy, you know, he's always, she's always putting him, she's always, you know, getting on him about blah, 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 you know. He probably got angry and just started beating her, like, just so casually, and like it's such a normal thing. And then I was watching it a couple weeks ago, and when that part came up again, I just, remembering that conversation with my brother, and I just started laughing my ass off at that again. Ugh, so fun. Good times. And this is where they started to, you know, get the goriness of the franchise, you know, started to turn it up a little bit, because, you know, this is where, yeah, the gore factor for the Halloween franchise, started to take a big turn. And this one, you saw a lot more blood in this one. Probably with the most famous kill in the film being the one nurse, the blonde nurse, where he stabs her in the spine with the scalpel, and she's raised up from the in the air, and then her nursing clogs fall off and he drops her. I think, yeah, that is the most famous kill in the film, which they did replicate in H2O, though not as well done in my opinion. The other nurse, like, she gets the syringe in the eye, which is pretty brutal, because it was a syringe filled with air, nothing but air, and then he puts the needle in and injects the air. Yeah, that will kill you. I know it doesn't seem like it, but yes, that will legitimately kill you. I'm telling you, it will. Yeah, I do work in the medical field. I know that shit can kill you, and it will. Because, you know, you get air injected into you, especially if you inject it into your veins. You know, you have a pulmonary embolism, go into cardiac arrest, and just fall over and die. And the funny thing, like, on the Blu-ray that I have for it, then they have some of the deleted scenes that were for Halloween 2. The original ending for the movie, after Laurie, you know, is being taken away in the ambulance, that Jimmy in the movie, the EMT that's, you know, very protective over her, which, you know, now as an adult I realize is kind of creepy, because she's supposed to be a high school student. He's a grown adult, and he's like all over her. I understand, you know, they know each other, because, like, he says it in the movie that, you know, she goes to school with my little brother, and it's like, realizing that he's a grown adult hitting on a high school student, looking back on it now, it's like, it's a little creepy. But, you know, because he was pretty young too, so I guess you have to excuse it. I don't know. But that at the end of the movie, the original ending, when he sits up, or you see a sheet rise up, sort of with the person with a sheet over them, and then Laurie pulls the sheet, and it's him. And then she just starts crying, and she's like, we made it. But in the theatrical release, they cut that part out, and it's just a look at her face. Cut to the burning mask of Michael Myers after the big explosion at the end, and roll the credits, and live happily ever after with the sounds of Mr. Sandman playing as the credits roll. And pretty good ending, if I do say so myself. And coming in at number two, we have Halloween 2018, which I do have my review available on here if y'all want to check it out in the archives. You know, you just gotta circle back a whole year to October of 2018, where this one, just like H2O, although in my opinion done much better, this film wipes out all of the sequels from existence. From Halloween's 2 in 1981, all the way to Halloween Resurrection and the Rob Zombie films, out of existence completely, are gone, to create the new timeline that we are currently in, which, as I said at the beginning, would be Halloween 1978, Halloween 2018, Halloween Kills, and then Halloween Ends. Really, there isn't that much for me to say that I didn't already say in my review, that, again, you guys can check it out anytime you want to, but just absolutely love this movie so much. And when I saw it last year in the theaters, and then I was just so, like, my mouth was wide open with a big smile pretty much from start to finish, because I absolutely loved it, you know, because like it finally, it felt like a Halloween movie again, you know, like finally a proper Halloween sequel. And it was great, so great. And we had Jamie Lee Curtis back again for this one, just like in H2O, but what makes this one so great is that They finally took an original approach to the story where it was, what if, at the end of the first Halloween, what if Michael gets captured and he's locked up and he's been locked up for 40 years? You know, like, I love that. Like how nobody came up with something like that sooner, I don't know. Well, actually, you know, there was one script, which I believe it was, again, you can check it on the, we watched the movie, was one of the proposed stories, earlier on, that it was you know, one of the canceled Halloween sequels, and don't remember what it was called, but you know, this version was the one that won over the studio, written by Jeff Fradley and Danny McBride and David Gordon Green, and directed by David Gordon Green. It was this script was enough that the Cod family and Blumhouse just loved it so much that they decided, you know what, we're gonna go with this. You know, this is a great one. And also, this film, for whatever reason, whatever it was about this film, this was the film that finally got John Carpenter to return to the franchise, which none of the other sequels did. And to me, that just says a lot about how good this movie was. Because, I don't know, I just, again, something about this movie that just spoke to Carpenter that made him decide, you know what, I'm gonna come back. Yeah? And he composed a brilliant score with his son Cody and with Daniel Davies, which they had the expanded edition of the score that just came out earlier this month, where it's the full complete score featuring all the music in the movie, which is just such a great score. And again, this is a true Halloween sequel that I just love so much. Oh my gosh, I just love it so much. Sorry, there's not a lot that I can say that hasn't already been said. I mean, we had Judy Greer playing Laurie's daughter in the film, and Andy Matichak, who played the granddaughter. And Will Patton was an officer on there. He plays the officer that's apparently was the arresting officer with Sheriff Brackett after the events of the first film. So that's a really cool little tidbit of the story, which is a great way to tie it in. And another thing that I really love that there's a lot of homages to the previous films that I just think is just absolutely brilliant, so brilliant in my opinion, at least. Like they have the skeleton witch and pumpkin masks that are featured from Halloween 3, that they show. You see a couple of kids wearing those, and there's a shout out to Mr. Elrod in the movie as well. And when Michael, you know, after he retrieves the mask and goes on his first killing spree, the two little kids that he bumps into, one of them is dressed like the dude from Halloween 2 with the boombox and the cowboy hat. So that was pretty cool. And then the woman that Michael kills when he gets the knife, wearing the pink robe and the, you know, the stuff, the curlers in the hair, just like Mrs. Elrod in Halloween 2. You know, again, so many homages to the previous Halloween films, and I love that so much. It's just so awesome and great, and you can tell that these guys are legitimate fans of the film, because why else would they have done all that stuff, you know? And honestly, like, I think other than the first Halloween film, I think this is the only one that I've seen as many times as I've seen the first film, which is, like I said before, if most of them I've seen at least 5 times each. I say this one and the first Halloween I've seen at least 10 times by now. But I'm probably going to see them a bunch of more times in the very near future, especially with Halloween Kills coming out next year, which they are filming it right now, you know, because we're going to be getting at least 2 more of these. Again, Halloween Kills comes out next year, Halloween Ends comes out 2021. The exact dates, actually, that are Halloween Kills will be October 16th, 2020, and Halloween Ends October 15th, 2021. Halloween Kills, again, it's currently filming, and it's actually being filmed a little over an hour away from me in Wilmington. I live in Jacksonville, North Carolina. They're being filmed in Wilmington, North Carolina. And if you heard my previous podcast, did apply to get a job as an extra for the film. But unfortunately, as of this recording, have not heard back from them about it. Oh well. Sucks. Would have been really awesome. But you know what? I still am very much looking forward to watching Halloween Kills next year. If they don't get in touch with me to be an extra, you know what? That's fine. I won't dwell on it. Would have been a great opportunity, but I ain't angry. It's just cool to say that I'm out 1 hour away from where they're filming Halloween. It's so freaking awesome. Just wish they would have called me. Anyways, some stuff that I had heard about that the way the movie was supposed to originally end, I don't know what that original ending was going to be, but apparently it didn't test well with test audiences. That's why we got the ending that we do have, with the house, burning up and Michael just, in the basement of the house, just staring up at them, which I absolutely love that's the final shot that we see of Michael, just staring up at them, just staring at her, staring at Lori, staring at the daughter, at Allison and Karen. That's their names. Yeah, see, finally put it together in my head. Yeah, just staring at them. I absolutely love that. So awesome. The only thing that would have made it better is if he did the signature head tilt. But, I guess after a while that, for some people that might be a little overplayed, but, it is what it is. We all love that head tilt. But yeah, since we are gonna get the Halloween Kills next year, how are we gonna learn? How did he escape from the house? Is the question that we all wonder now. Which, we'll find all that out next year. And of course, we arrive at number one, which, not a surprise what this one is, as I'm sure with my rankings, you pretty much figure out what number one is going to be by now. It is the original and the greatest Halloween 1978, the film that changed the game forever and created the era of the slasher film that dominated the 80s. Crafted so beautifully and brilliantly by John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, because this film, unlike other films that would come afterwards, this film was built on the suspense and the unknown, and I just fucking love it so much. This is one of my absolute favorite films ever. It is so, again, it's just the pacing of it. As they say, it's a slow burn, but it's the best kind of slow burn, and I love it so much. It's just such, and this is the silver screen debut of Jamie Lee Curtis. This we were gifted the beautiful and talented and amazing Jamie Lee Curtis through this movie, and we were blessed with the one of the absolute greatest scores in Hollywood history from John Carpenter. This simple yet complicated, if that makes any sense, score that created an atmosphere that many have tried to replicate but have failed so miserably to do. And we got Donald Pleasance as Dr. Loomis for the first time, and it was just, we had no idea just where this was going to go, and it was just so batshit crazy at the time. The thing that fascinates me the most though with this movie, because like so many documentaries that I've watched about Halloween, is that this film was almost a flop, if not for the review that turned it all around from Roger Ebert. From some documentaries, that's how I've heard it, that the one glowing raving review from Roger Ebert is when things started to turn around, and it became the box office hit that it became, and became the most profitable film of its kind at the time, and it still is one of the most profitable franchises in the world, especially for horror, slasher, whatever you want to call it. And nothing I say can really do it justice, because other better, more credible people have spoken so highly of this film that I would just be blowing smoke. Well, that's gonna do it for this edition of Worst to Best. I hope you all enjoyed listening and heard some stuff that you liked, and enjoyed my rankings for these films. And if you didn't enjoy it, thanks for tuning in anyway, because I like when you get my numbers up. And again, all the links for the documentaries that I have referenced throughout this podcast will be posted in the description for anyone interested in checking them out. And please check out my previous Worst to Best rankings for Spider-Man and for Batman. as well as my retro film reviews for Lion King, Masters of the Universe, Adventures of Baron Munchausen, my classic wrestling pay-per-view for reviewing WWF Bad Blood in Your House, as well as my other podcast episodes that I've done on here, my other film reviews for Halloween 2018, as I mentioned already, for Aquaman, for Fighting With My Family, Captain Marvel, Avengers Endgame, Dark Phoenix, Spider-Man Far From Home, The Lion King, and so on and so on and so on. Don't forget to subscribe to the Menatize Podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, and YouTube. Follow me on Twitter at IamFozitude for all podcast updates. Follow me on Instagram at Fozitude for the fun pictures and memes I post. Follow me on Vero at Fozitude for everything else. Please support the podcast by donating to my Hall of Justice on Patreon for only $5 a month. The link will be in the description. Check out the Menatize Podcast store for shirts, stickers, and wall art. That link will be in the description as well. As always, thank you all so much for tuning in and for subscribing. I love and appreciate every single one of you who do. I truly and genuinely do, and I hope you all enjoy your weekend and that you enjoy your Halloween. And spend it with your loved ones, have fun trick-or-treating, going to all the parties, getting drunk off your asses if you do. This has been Worst to Best for the Menatize Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see you all next time. Happy Halloween. Bye-bye. Happy Halloween.